So we have the metta sutta, Buddhist words on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Just a minute or so of meditation, a minute or two. Just close our eyes, relax the body. Just be with the in-breath coming in and the out-breath going out. Coming into the present. Giving up the past and the future and thinking, reacting. Getting involved with the world, putting it all down. Just have an in-breath and an out-breath.
Okay.
So when we listen to a Dhamma talk, sometimes it's useful just to meditate, you know, we just focus on our meditation object while we're listening as well. And then if the talk, if the Dhamma kind of contacts with our heart, that's okay. So, you know, it teaches us that, you know, I think the word meditation has a lot of emphasis in the West, you know, sit down and meditate, now it's time to meditate. But there's not really a word meditation in the ancient Pali. There's samadhi, which is like the firmness of mind and one-pointedness and strength of mind. It's like concentration, it's where the mind becomes concentrated and powerful. And then there's bhavana, which is like mental cultivation, cultivating the mind. And so usually the Buddha would teach more bhavana to lay people that are busy in the world. So it's learning to use the mind towards contemplating useful things, like the qualities of the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, generosity, moral virtue, precepts, and the five qualities of a heavenly being. And so because when we keep our mind on something, what are we doing? We're developing strength of mind. So the result of that will be samadhi. So, and the other way is to develop our calm object. So we pick an object like the breath or a mantra, like in Thailand they have the word Buddha, and put within the do with the out breath, or even just mentally reciting words saying Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. And defilements come up, Buddha, 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 Buddha. So it's like you just find an object that suits one. And the thing is, you can't have doubt in that. So, you know, whether you try for a meditation or you try for a week of meditations, you know, it's like without really putting in some effort, we won't know whether it's suitable or not. And so we need mindfulness and then application to try. And then if we can't find an object that suits them, then we should go speak to experienced meditators and find one that suits. You know, when I learned breath meditation, I went to the various books, ancient commentaries and things, and the great teachers, and so learned the different ways, because really you're just developing strong mindfulness, you know. So sometimes I would count the breath, sometimes I would use, you know, peace, sometimes I would do death meditation along with the breath. And so over the years, you know, I tried different things to work out, you know, how I could be with the breath. Because until we have mindfulness, until we have strength of mind with our meditation object, then we're not really there all the time. And so until we're there all the time, then we don't have samadhi. You know, it's like a simile I was having from the other week. It's like somebody studying to be a doctor. You know, if they don't learn to study, then things are going to get very difficult for them very fast, because they're not going to remember anything. And eventually, you know, they're going to flunk their first year and have to start again. And so even though meditation is a slow process, we still want to make sure that we're slowly building the right causes and we have an object that's working, because otherwise, in a way, we are wasting time. And so one good way is like to have preliminaries. So in Buddhism, we, you know, have the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So when you sit down and meditate, you know, can either in English or an ancient chant, and you actually bring up these qualities, like what they mean and what they are. And then, or the ancient chant, you know, it's like, go to refuge to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Buddha Minato, Dhamma Minato, Sangha Minato. Buddha, Buddha, Dhamma, Dhamma, Sangha, Sangha. So, but the point is, if we do something like that, we're pointing our heart to it. So we know what that means, you know, we've done it before. And so that brings up our purpose, you know, and in our focus. And then another good thing is then to bring up the four Brahma Viharas, you know, like boundless benevolence to all beings, including myself. Boundless benevolence to all beings, including myself. Boundless benevolence to all beings, including myself. Until that thought is strong in the mind. And then boundless compassion to all beings, including myself. Boundless compassion to all beings, including myself. And then the next one, boundless, you know, appreciate joy to all beings, including myself. Boundless appreciate joy to all beings, including myself. Once you have that feeling, Move on to the next one, boundless equanimity to all beings, including myself. Boundless and profound equanimity to all beings, including myself. And then, so this is like the preliminaries. And then, you know, usually at that point, then I would look, either relax the body and eyes, as I usually describe, so either scanning through the body or doing something like the elements, you know, going through the four elements or four elements including space, the first five elements. Because we're just doing something, coming into the present, cutting out our thinking and making sure that, you know, we're centered in the present. And so there are preliminaries. And then we need a meditation object that we have, you know, great faith in, great confidence in, you know, that this meditation is really going to help us focus our mind. And why are we focusing our mind? We're trying to develop calm to begin with. And so every time the mind goes off, we bring it back. Mind goes off, we bring it back. It doesn't have to be a difficult task. It's just like an apprentice, you know, learning to craft a piece of wood. It's going to make mistakes. You know, it's going to be difficult. But if you've got a good attitude, and then you just keep coming back and keep listening again to your teacher's advice, trying again, slowly, you know, it's going to start looking like a chair, you know. But we don't start, of course, things don't just suddenly, you can't just get a tree and suddenly get a chair, you know. You've got to get the tree and you've got to take the bark off and you've got to chop the wood and you've got to learn how to do all of those things. It doesn't happen by itself. And so this is the point where, you know, yes, we develop our practice, but also we need to know where we're at. So if we can only develop 15 minutes of meditation and be with our meditation object, then, you know, once we've done the 15 minutes and we've sustained that time, then we congratulate ourselves. You know, well done, you know, you did that. And it's just like a baby learning to walk, you know, it has different stages. You know, first it learns to crawl. And then it learns to stand. And then you have to take the chair away from it, because otherwise it won't learn to stand on its own. And then it learns to walk. And you know, eventually all of these things, you get to a point of difficulty. But the only way you can get stronger is to have the right nutriment, you know, the right conditions. And so if you always gave the baby the chair, it would never learn to walk. It would stunt its growth, and or it would be very difficult anyway. And so these things, they're kind of natural, but they're not always natural. So we have to be able to be wise enough to look at our own practice and see where sometimes we have cruxes or hindrances that we get stuck in, and they're blocking our development in our meditation. I was going to mention the Sila. So this is a book by Lumpo Te, Dajahn Te. And there are giveaway books here, by the way. We're getting some books, great books in at the moment. And this is a teacher who I've studied. Oh yeah, so Stephen Taylor will be doing the talks on the Sunday, 3:30 to 4:30, and this one on Mondays for almost the rest of this month. So I'll be doing a personal retreat. He's very good also, because he actually was a monk for 7 years in Thailand back in the 70s, under this very teacher actually, under Lumpo Te. So Lumpo Te says, "It is hard for one who hasn't penetrated to the mind to keep the precepts." So whether, you know, somebody has the five precepts of a layperson, or the eight precepts of the moon observances, or the 10 precepts of a novice, or the 227 precepts of a bhikkhu, this is, you know, talking about the precepts of morality in Buddhism. So it's hard for one who hasn't penetrated to the mind to keep the precepts. If he does keep them, it will be in a way a cow herder looks after his cows, constantly looking forward to nightfall when he can herd them into the shed and go and have a sleep. Such a person doesn't realize that we keep precepts for the purity of body, speech, and mind. the more precepts we keep, and the longer we keep them, the greater the purity. If we can keep them as long as we live, then that's excellent. We will be able to abandon all evils in this life alone. If we don't know the virtue, which is sila in Pali, that is our nature, and we don't understand the virtue that compromises the acts of abstention, the prohibitions against the performance of evil, and so we blame the Buddha for laying down so many rules that we can't keep them all. Some people say, the longer you ordain, the more you study the discipline, the more the prohibitions you run up against. This is an offense, that is an offense, and so you accumulate more and more bad karma. It would be better to ordain for just 3 of 7 days, then you wouldn't have the chance to break too many rules. So he was just quoting what some monks say. It is truly depressing to hear that sort of opinion expressed. Buddhism has been promulgated in Thailand for more than 2,000 years now, and yet the light of Dharma has still not shone into such people's heart at all. It's really pathetic. They are like tortoises lying by the side of a lotus, impervious to its fragrance. When it penetrates to the heart, we will no longer have to look after our virtue. It looks after us. Whatever posture we are in, whether standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, virtue is alert, restraining, preventing transgression. Even if thought to do something evil arises in the mind, there is the knowing of that thought and a feeling of shame and shrinking from the proposed action. All the feelings of anger, ill will, vindictiveness can find no place in the heart, brimming full of kindness and compassion. Virtue is normality of body, speech, and mind. Once the mind loses its normality, then bodily action and speech must also, because they are under the sway of the mind. Therefore, those who truly wish to attain virtue and penetrate the Buddha's teachings must train their minds in meditation. And then there was a quote on what meditation is. We were talking about samadhi. Having taken birth in the human realm, we grasp onto the human body as being mine with great tenacity and insistence. The intelligent person cleanses his mind of its impurities with the practice of samadhi, which is the word I was talking about before, the strength of mind, concentration. A person cleanses his mind of impurities with the practice of samadhi until he realizes the heart and attains to the state of equanimity, which is devoid of past and future. It is in this way that the liberation from all defilements may be known. Samadhi pertains to the mind, but I hold it to be a matter of body and also speech, because body and speech are always implied by the presence of mind. When there is mind, there is thought, which is internal speech. With the very arising of thought, there is speech. When speech is present, the mind goes out roaming amongst the material forms of beings and people and objects of the world. Without those things, the mind would have nothing to latch on to. However coarse or subtle the mind is, whether it is dwelling in the realm of sensuality, form or formless, must always have a tangible base. There must always be internal, external sense fields, contact between them, and a constant sense of knowing. Even formless consciousness has the formless mind itself as its dwelling place. It is perceived clearly by the internal sense fields. So anyway, basically samadhi of body, speech and mind. This is the true result of our sila. Without sila, we're not going to have a bright mind. As much as we try, you know, the regret over our action, having that cow herder mind that's constantly having to watch over things, you know, that's going to make it difficult for us. And what I said on Sunday was from Ajahn Lee, and he said, just continuing on that, he said that I was talking about sati, self-awareness, and the four Brahma Viharas. But what he was saying, so sati, mindfulness, is the father, and self-awareness is the mother, and the food is the four Brahma Viharas. So the immeasurable benevolence, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable appreciative joy, immeasurable equanimity. So if we ever have difficulty with that precepts, all we need to do is meditate more, make sure we have very powerful Brahma Viharas, because that's going to be the food. If we starve that food in our mind, then the child is going to be malnutrition, you know, not have enough food. It's going to be weak and frail. You know? So we don't have to worry too much. We just strengthen the Brahma Viharas. And then when we come back to look at our action, the mind is far more powerful. And so that's why, you know, I recommend having a practice of either metta or any of the first three Brahma Viharas, where each day we actively cultivate that. You know, because it's going to take, you know, weeks and months of daily effort to make it something that's very, very strong. Because then, like that little chant I did earlier, if you really have these strong, sometimes when you point your mind to these things, the mind stops. Just even thinking about them. That's how much the mind has cultivated these things. And so then at the start of every meditation, we have the ability to bring these qualities up. And they're what nourish both the strength of our precepts and also the strength of our samadhi. So that was a lot of information. Is there any questions about that?
I did have some as you're talking about the
That's okay.
Can you talk about the preliminaries that you can use before you meditate?
Sure.
So can you use those preliminaries as little reminders throughout the day?
Yeah. So basically, there's two ways of looking at it. So there was a sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, I think, where the Buddha said that relax the body, relax the eyes, don't flow after the asavas. So the asavas is where your mind goes out and gets involved with sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and thought, or worries about the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. So basically past, future, proliferation, thinking, body pains, whatever. So, but without a relaxed body and a relaxed eyes, it's going to be very difficult for the mind to be centered. So they're the conditions both for meditation and also of an enlightened being. So an enlightened being, the result of an enlightened being is the mind no longer goes outside, no longer gets involved with anything. And so that's the conditions of meditation. But then beyond that, we're training in mindfulness. And so, to begin with, you know, you can look up the teaching on Anapanasati, the 16 phases. But the first four stages of Anapanasati, you know, they're the main stages, really. And that's like be aware of the bodily formations, of it. Just be aware that there is an in-breath, be aware that there is an out-breath, be aware of the bodily formations of the in-breath, be aware of the bodily formations of the out-breath. And then tranquilize the in-breath, tranquilize those formations. And so that's like a concrete meditation object. But then in the higher stages, you have the other factors which lead you into contemplation and into feeling and mind states and stuff. So you can look up the 16 stages of breath meditation. But what mindfulness is called kaya kastha asati, like mindfulness of the body. And so the Buddha said mindfulness of the body is supreme. So what we're doing in our little activities of the day, it's fine to do that, you know, like mindfulness and clear comprehension is what most people think of mindfulness, where you're present to what you're doing, you know what you're doing, you're reaching your arm out, you know your arm is reaching out,
reaching your arm back, you know your arm is reaching back. And in the Burmese tradition, they even use mental noting, like, you know, extending, returning, lifting, walking. So look up Mahasi Sayadaw, so they actually have a mental noting. But people who don't mental note, they don't understand it, and they think their whole tradition is rubbish. But it's just another samatha object. So it's just a useful way. Not everybody thinks that. Most people see it as a useful aid. But once we do something with our mind enough times, it unifies with our mind. So that's why in Thailand they use the Buddha mantra. Eventually your mind will unify with that. And so all of these preliminary techniques, they're just a means for us to know where our mind is, to be totally present, to not be proliferating, not going out into the past and future. It doesn't mean, though, we don't reflect still. So, you know, we still need to reflect on our actions of body, speech, and mind. And at times we still need to make decisions. Otherwise we would never go anywhere and we would die very fast. So there's still like the basic conditions of life need to be met. But the mindfulness, like Stephen Taylor said, like, you know, just start with one activity, like you're saying. And so when you make a cup of tea, make that a period where you're mindful. Or maybe like when you brush your teeth, think one day your teeth are going to fall out, that, you know, teeth are impermanent and nothing to be attached to. When you comb your hair, think the same thing about your hair. And because they're things we don't want to think about. But then there's something that brings up a sense of urgency that you wouldn't otherwise do it. But once you've done that, you know, 10, 100 times, it becomes a habit. So at that time, suddenly you're really mindful when you're doing that thing because you have a way of doing it that makes you mindful. And but obviously, a lot of the coarser contemplations, they're more difficult to do. But yes, mindfulness through the day. And then I've taught it before, but the five regular contemplations. So as well as our meditation, we should be contemplating old age, sickness, death. And then all that is mine, beloved, and pleading become otherwise, become separated from me. And that we're the owner of our actions, born of our actions, related to our actions. You know, whatever we do, with whether good or evil, of that we will be the inheritor. So they're the kind of the core teachings that help us break our attachments. Because usually we're infatuated with health, we're infatuated with youth, we're infatuated with life, we're infatuated with our possessions, and we're ignorant of our actions. So this is where we suffer because of that. If we don't suffer now, we suffer when we die. Or worse, we suffer the results of our actions. So, but yeah, what you're saying about little mindfulness activities, that's, you know, or just in helping an old friend of mine who's a school teacher and, you know, got young kids, and that's what you have to do, you know, because life is crazy for some people, so many things. You have your little meditations and then you just have to try and find little periods of time through the day where you can remind yourself to do mindfulness activities. And then if you ever forget one week or you got lost, just learn from it, see the results. Now, well, this is what happens if this X, Y, and Z occurs. This is the result. This is suffering. And then learn what mindfulness is. But yeah, no, that's very valid. And it's just a question of strength of mind. Some people can have one object all the time. Like Ajahn Mahabhava just used the word Buddha. Eventually he just had enough and he decided he was just going to use Buddha. So whether his meditation was good or bad, or whether he was talking or sweeping, he just continued reciting his mantra until his mind eventually unified. But, you know, a lot of people are in between, you know, where you develop your peaceful meditation and sometimes you develop your contemplations. There's even a third group who kind of in between that. So you've just got to look at your own mind and see what works. But it's like, you know, talking about it's no good. We've actually got to like get at it. And all the words about meditation and mindfulness, you know, we know what it is when it is, you know, because we're practicing. So part of the effort is just getting at it, you know, really, really trying. And then in the process of learning to juggle, eventually we juggle. But then to become wise to what the causes were. For example, for me, I found contemplating the five aggregates, which is a teaching I've taught here before, which is the form, feeling, labels of recognition, volition, consciousness, the five components of a being that we all cling to and identify with. And for whatever reason, for me, that's a very fascinating meditation object. And I've used it, you know, time and time again over the years in recollection of the Buddha. And because I had a very crazy mind that liked to think a lot, as well as my breath meditation and my metta, I had to find contemplation so I could learn directive thought. So directive thought is where you take your contemplation and then you sustain your mind with that thought for long periods of time. You know, so you're using the strength you got from your peace to use the power of your thinking to stay on one topic or stay on one word. Our meditation is just our formal posture, where we do the standing, walking, sitting, or lying down. Usually it's standing, usually walking and sitting, and some people also like standing. Usually we avoid lying down unless we have physical ailments, because people tend to just fall asleep. But mindfulness activities, very important. So we'll do the guided meditation now. Would you mind just turning the light off in the next room, Judy? So just start by getting ourselves in a comfortable position. Usually like to start the meditation by having a sense of inner uprightness. If we can, we might slightly straighten our posture to have a kind of bright inner mind. Even if it's just slightly, like a few degrees. Then if we ever get tired in the meditation, just maybe picture like a light, a candle or a sun inside the mind, and just to bring in some luminosity. We will start, if we like, by relaxing the body, the tips of the hair of the head, the face and the eyes, the neck, shoulders, arms and hands, torso, chest, lungs, heart, abdomen, upper back, middle back, lower back, waist, the hips, the thighs, the knees, the cartilage, all of the joints, the shins and calves, the feet, the whole body. From the bone pulp out to the skin, whole body inside out, blood, the wind, the heat, the earth, all of it. Just suffuse it with relaxation, accept it as it is. Just have a sense of detachment, don't need to get involved with it. Just accept it as a friend. Just these, the elements that are with us now. The body's relaxed. Just come back to the eyes. Check the eyes are relaxed. Usually might be able to sense restlessness and agitation, worry in the eyes. Just let the eyes become totally peaceful. relax, eyes relax. We look at the mind, the heart. Mind has a tendency to go out and get involved with thoughts of the past and hopes of the future or fears. And imagines, reacts to sounds and bodily senses and all these things. We just guard the door of the mind. Don't need to get involved with all these things, liking and disliking. Just have a sense of equanimity. This high and sensitive balance. Letting go. Whatever arises, just let it go. Set up a inner sense of seclusion. Nothing needs to disturb us in our meditation. Like, we can bring up the qualities of the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha and the four Brahmaviharas or any other preliminaries we have. Meditation object. Now's our time to bring it up. And should it try and have inspiration and confidence in our meditation object. This is suited to us. Just like a good apprentice, willing to try. So all this required. Those who wish will give a brief guided meditation on the breath. Just become aware of the in-breath as it is, the out-breath as it is. Choose a comfortable point of focus. Make sure we're not tensing the eyes. To be aware of the feeling, sensations of the in-breath, sensations of the out-breath. Unknowing into the in-breath, unknowing into the out-breath. Don't need to get involved with anything else. You can sustain a sense of inner uprightness and luminosity. Also just relax if you need, if you're tense. Most people may need to just brighten their minds there. Aware of the in-breath coming in, out-breath going out. Allowing this heart to become like a still lake, reflecting a full moon. Aware of the whole of the in-breath. Aware of the whole of the out-breath. Like an in-breath, it's broken into 16 parts. Our breath is broken into 16 parts. We're just trying to follow it, trying to be right there. Just content with this much. As we continue to follow the breath, just be aware of how the breath is, how the in-breath is, how the out-breath is. How it is in the present. Allow the in-breath to settle into a sense of ease. The out-breath to settle into a sense of ease. It's like we've come out of a desert to a perfect oasis and some fresh water, and we're sitting under a cool tree. Just a sense of ease. Still following the in-breath. The out-breath as it is, incorporating a sense of ease. towards the last minute of the meditation. So that the causes and conditions we can learn from our meditation. Also see the benefit of coming, listen to the Dhamma, practice meditation. Great use. Share a sense of benevolence, universal goodwill with ourselves, those in this room, those on this property, kangaroos, the birds, tree daimas, whatever beings there may be, all beings everywhere, above, below, all around, seen and unseen, lofty and low, near and far, all beings, including ourselves, down this heart of metta. May we take this peace and mindfulness into our lives. It's the end of the meditation. The side of the dedication of merits. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize Nibbana and every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge and surpasses the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. And the blessing. And a mode in the blessing. Beginning of it. Yatta varivaha pura pari parenti sagaram. Evang eva ito dinam petanam upakapati chitam patitam tumham kipameva samijutu sabhe parentu sangapa chando panara so yata mani choti raso yata subhityo viva chantu saparupo ina sattu mate pavantwa tarayo suki. Kayu ko pawa habiwa Tannasi li sani changuta pachayino chataro dhamma vatanti ayuvano sukha pala. Okay, safe journeys home.